Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that thought it was out, but now has been sucked back in. It's time to do a little stargazing. Mark, it's been a journey, my friend, and it continues in the immortal words of Anton Hudobin. We're not going home.
All right, well, it turns out we're going to Vegas.
Going to Vegas, baby.
Yep. The quote was, we aren't staying home, so I guess we're on a plane. Oh, yeah. If anything, at least the Stars game 3 and 4 was kind of the highlight of my last week. So I'm feeling okay. But the question of the day is, what does it take to suck you back in? What gets you to believe in the Dallas Stars again?
And it's funny how one game can change perceptions, right? Because, like, think about even just like the order of the games, right? If the game 3 kerfluffle, if that had been game 1, right? Would your opinion? And we'll start with a question. Why am I asking hypotheticals and rhetoricals? I'm just going to ask you because you're here. So if you were to swap game 3 with game 1 in just the timeline of the series, would that influence your perception of how things have gone?
Probably not. I mean, it took so long to get off the whole, this is the way Dallas plays these series. And so you lose game 1 in overtime and it just progresses the pace and you expect it to go to a certain point and Dallas wins. But, the thing is, it's almost like game 3 was this, everybody thought they knew what this team was. And it was so utterly out of character for what you'd been led to believe with the development of Jamie Benn and as a captain and with his maturity, that it was so out of left field that everybody just kind of dropped their jaw and quit doing anything.
It felt on, and this is armchair psychology, right? So it probably doesn't mean anything. It felt to me. So, and part of why I asked the order question is, you know, game 1, they got outplayed, almost stole it. Game 2, they, in my opinion, outplayed Vegas for most of that, had it stolen from them, right? So all of the talk, you know, and this isn't even like hindsight being 20/20, right? But all the talk heading into game 3 was that now it's going to be a series, right? They didn't show up for game 1 and got burned. They showed up for game 2 and got a reality check. Now it's on, right? And I think they had to feel that, hear that maybe even. And so you have a team that feels like they should have had game 2, right? They had them, right? We had them. And that team now is going home and hearing everybody else say, yeah, they had him. It's on now. It's going to be good. And then to start as poorly as they did, as quickly as they did, honestly, I think part of it was even, you know, they're maybe call it embarrassment or, you know, you get punked early on your home ice. And then we'll talk about, you know, we're not going to get too much into it because it's a couple days old at this point, but got to talk about the JB Benn thing. But I think then you have, you know, your captain trying to, I guess, lead by example or bring, you know, something, I don't know, bring the physicality, right? Jack the bench, do something to get kind of changed. So you just sort of get into this spiraling situation where you have a team that was maybe believing a little bit of its own hype, getting a reality check, trying to arrest the slide, making it a million times worse and, you know, winding up with a catastrophe. And so it just kind of felt like it was uncharacteristic, but it was also sort of this combination of Dallas has been overconfident in the past. Dallas has had random discipline issues in the past. Dallas has lost when, you know, it was sort of the Voltron of previous small mistakes this team has made coming together to give you an absolute disaster was kind of how I viewed game 3.
Yeah, it's like everything that you planned for just went south immediately. And obviously plan B was not, plan A went so disastrously wrong that plan B wasn't even an option. I mean, literally, I think people just quit playing hockey.
Yeah.
And that
was the Domi penalty, right? It was breakdown city.
Yeah, exactly. This is how Minnesota ultimately reacted toward the end of that series. And unfortunately, you didn't have any on ice leadership. Yeah, I mean, you had Pavelski, you had some guys, but you also had everybody. All trust was gone. Maybe that's
the well. I would say you did. I think the way to, and this is getting into parsing words. You didn't. You had on ice leaders, but you did not have on ice leadership because nobody arrested the slide. Nobody stopped.
You didn't have a team. I think is how I would put it. Yeah. And people quit thinking that they were a team and they started playing like individuals. And we saw that the whole game, and you can't do that in this sport. And we kind of saw the individual tendencies come out, you know, Domi's going to react and not necessarily keep his cool. And so that's exactly what you saw, but you saw a team of individuals or a group of individuals who didn't know how to react to a situation and were just ready for it to be over.
Yeah.
And that they brought back and you know, it was striking to me that things didn't start out really good in game four, but the team stuck together and that was vital. And that is what gives me this tiny little inkling of hope that this team can continue to fight.
There's
enough stuff out there. You know, the likelihood of this turning into a good Dallas Stars story is very, very, very tiny. But it's not a tear down the team. What in the world have we wrought? We're going to break it all down and start over.
Well, and that's kind of why I led this with the question of if you change the order of the games, because I agree. Like, if you look at the series, it's three very close games that probably could have gone either way, and then the breakdown, right? And so the chronology matters. And if that had been, you know, if that had been game one, and then Dallas lost a couple of quick ones, and then won game four, I think you'd be looking at it from a much different perspective about a team that was kind of, to your point, I think you're right. They didn't, game four wasn't, you know, the emphatic, they get run out of the building by Minnesota. And the response to that is they're up, I think, four goals in the first period. You know, they just put the hammer down and that game's never in doubt. And it wasn't a situation like that where they went from embarrassed to dominant, right? They had to fight and claw in a way that almost makes it more important, more interesting, because it didn't come easy. And thankfully, right, just aesthetically, they didn't fold. And now, to your point, we were talking about this in the pre-show, it gets into one of those, like, the odds are terrible. It's what, four teams have done it. And I don't think any of them, I think only one of them has done it out past the first round. So certainly by this stage, teams that make conference finals don't tend to lose four games in a row, except I guess the Carolina Hurricanes, but it's just one of those. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about hope. And, you know, we had our first real, you know, all caps, big Jason Robertson goal scoring game. He had both of the goals in regulation prior to the Pavelski overtime winner. So when you think about why this might work out, what comes to mind? What are the reasons? Why should we hope?
Well, a couple things. One is, you know, even before Robertson was scoring goals, he was hitting pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stars, for the most part, have gotten things by Hill, but they haven't gotten them in the net. And so I think that gives you some hope that maybe their shots are just slightly off. Maybe they're trying to be a little too perfect. Maybe they're rushing things because the Vegas defense has been very structured and has limited the quality shots that they get. The other thing I think that gives me a little bit of hope is that we're starting to see that the top line can operate the way that it has in the past. And I don't know that Vegas has a really good answer to that.
Well, to your point about the shooting, right, Robertson's goals were rebounds. And there was it felt like Dallas, it felt like the rebounds have been there in the same way that they've been, you know, hitting posts, missing wide, having shots blocked. It seems like there have been rebounds as well. And Dallas has struggled to this point in the series, you know, to turn them into things. Whereas this past game, hey, we saw some signs that maybe they're starting to do that. So I think, you know, to me, one of the first things that jumps out is, was it 18 games to start the season was Robertson's scoring streak when he came out of the gate just on an absolute blister. And I think if you're talking about reasons to be hopeful, one of the first that has to come to mind as a Stars fan is, you know, if we're looking at a Jason Robertson heater, then that significantly changes the calculus for a Stars team that, you know, game three accepted, has been close, right? And has been playing Vegas pretty tight. If you interject into that situation, their Dallas's best scorer suddenly scoring in bunches, maybe those margins change and you can see a path.
Yeah. And the other thing to keep in mind here is that we really haven't seen Aiden Hill under a whole lot of adversity. And so if you start putting some pucks past him and in the net, he doesn't necessarily have the pedigree to know how to react to that and just immediately bounce back. And we haven't really talked about this. I don't know why, but I mean, Jake Oettinger hasn't been great in this entire playoffs.
No.
And there's a whole lot to be said for a team that feels comfortable and is confident that their goaltender has their back, and so that they can make mistakes, and that he's going to make most of the saves back there if you do make a mistake. And he really hasn't been able to do that much in this playoffs. We saw a lot of it in game four. But at that point, if a team loses even a little bit of confidence in their goaltender, they tend to try and do too much themselves.
Yeah, he's had great games at times, but this has not been the postseason that everyone expects. I think, you know, heading into every round, just, you know, we do the preview thing on the site, right? I think most of my previews for Dallas Stars series have centered around this notion of, well, they should have an advantage in the pipes, and it just hasn't manifested that way over the entire course of the postseason.
Yeah, and I mean, the same thing works for, you know, defensive pairs, for instance. If you know that your partner is going to be in a certain place to take certain things, then you can go ahead and make the play that you want to make. But if you are worried that you have to cover for your partner, you're not going to take the proper path to the puck because you're cheating.
Yep.
And you know, I think the national broadcast brought this out on the Marchessault goal that went through Suter's leg. He actually shot it through Suter's legs. Oettinger was depending on Suter having that stick because he knew he was there.
Yep.
And so he didn't cheat off the pipe quite rightly because he knew Suter had his guy covered. And it turns out he didn't. And that little bit of doubt, you know, that's the type of thing that creaks in that, okay, all of a sudden Oettinger's keep cheating off of the pipe. And so now you're vulnerable to something along the post. Trust is very important here. And not trusting what is going on with your partners has been part of the problem that Dallas has faced, especially here in this Vegas series.
Yeah, and I think as well, you get to this point, and this is where the good teams are, and those margins really, really start to matter. I mean, game two, I think, was the perfect example. Dallas played a fantastic game and was in every position to win. And, you know, I'm not even on the, like, he's been good this postseason, right? But charitably, Ryan Suter made, what, two pretty egregious errors in game two, and that's the loss, right? And so I think you've gotten to the stage where when you're talking about cheating and trust, you really absolutely have to have it, because the margins of victory and defeat are so slim.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, take a look at somebody like Joel Hanley. I think that's one of the reasons Hanley finds himself in the lineup all the time, is because he may not always physically be able to make the play, but you can pretty much depend that he's going to be in the spot you expect him to be.
Yeah. And I mean, in game one as well, there have been some moments, there have been some, let's call them high variability moments out of Thomas Harley. And, you know, after a very stellar postseason to this point, he had a couple against Seattle as well. And yeah, it's things, and it's kind of characterized the game two loss came right after it, you know, a near win by Dallas, right? A lot of the bad is happening right on the heels of something else in those situations where it really does have to be reflex. And it really does have to be kind of trust the structure, trust the system, trust things are going to work out. And then they just don't. Something breaks the chain.
Yeah.
But to add a little context right now, Jake Oettinger is at negative 7.36 goals saved above average or against average. So very, very poor. Whereas our buddy Aiden Hill's at 805 plus. So there is almost a
15 goal difference.
Yeah, huge, huge difference. You know, 958 save percentage for Hill versus 901 for Oettinger, and that'll get you killed.
Yeah. In some ways, with the numbers the way they are for Oettinger, it's amazing that the stars are where they are. Because he's really the only goaltender that's out there that's anywhere close to being negative, let alone being as extremely negative as he is in those expected goals against.
Yeah, and the other thing as well is, and this isn't going to be a Jake Oettinger bash fest eternally. It's, you know, you're starting to look at, and I've just got some, I jotted some natural stat trick nerdery down and you know, thinking about like high danger and things like that. So Jakey has so far this postseason, 80 is the number, 80 high danger shots chance, you know, kind of credit against him. And Aiden Hill's at 30, or sorry, at 43.
Right, so exactly. It's systemic. And
yeah, I guess my point being that we've not seen the Jake Oettinger we need to see for Dallas to have any sort of sustained success, but it is also kind of reductive to say, oh, well, Ottinger's playing poorly, therefore they're losing. Like, this is the shots, the game tying, because I'm, you know, I can still sear it into my mind, you know, the game tying goal from game two, like what goal, you know, how do you expect a goalie to make a save on a blown coverage, you know, 4 feet out from the net? Like, that's one of those, the phrase team goal comes to mind, right? And it's you can't just look at that and say, well, that was Oettinger's, he should have had it. Well, you know, I bet he would have liked to, but defender might have done something about it too.
Yeah, it's a 2 points on that. One, about 5 seconds before that goal, I said, oh no, just because it was, you could tell Suter was going to lazy pass that thing.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, you've seen it for 2 years. You know what he's going to do with that. And then second of all, on Oettinger, you know, you take a look at goals scored versus expected goals scored against. It's not like Wedgwood's tearing it up either. I mean, there's evidence there that there's something going on here with we're giving up some really dangerous plays. And maybe we've come to expect that Oettinger's going to bail us out in those cases, and he's not.
And I think, to me, and we talked about it throughout the season, this is where we are seeing Dallas's struggles, their defensive depth. This is where we're seeing that come into play, because we talked about how, you know, the two ways to kind of offset that frailty, right? One of them is get better players, and the other one is to try and outscore it a little bit. And I think part of what we're seeing is, from a system perspective, you know, Pete DeBoer isn't an idiot. He knows what, you know, he knows how to coach a hockey team. And I think what one of the challenges is, this is not a defensive roster where you look at it and say, and then I'm getting overly binary. It's obviously more complicated than this, right? But this isn't a defensive roster where you look at it and say, well, we're going to solve this by just being better at defense and giving up fewer chances. I don't think that's where this team's like assets and talents lie. You know, like the shutdown pairing isn't walking through the door. You've still got to play, you know, Yanni Hakanpää and you know, Joel Hanley and Ryan Suter and the like. So I think part of the calculus for this particular version of the Stars has been, open it up a little bit, invite the chances against, and trust that a suddenly deep offense, a, you know, emergent Miro Heiskanen and emerging Thomas Harley and Jake Oettinger being stellar, right? And that's been kind of the calculus is, yeah, they're going to give up a little bit more and they're going to get a little bit loose. But the counter to doing that is they're going to get chances and they're going to get leads. And then that's going to kind of solve the problem that way. You know, Mark, People get hurt from car accidents, medical malpractice, and other personal injury accidents, but they never call an attorney. They leave thousands of dollars in medical bills and lost wages on the table that could otherwise be covered, and instead, just take the insurance company's word. This is silly when you could just call Robert Greening at Greening Law. Greening and his Green team are fierce legal competitors for you against the insurance companies. Consultations are free, so you have nothing to lose. And there are no hourly attorney fees either. They only get paid if you recover.
Right? These folks definitely need to call Robert Greening and the Green team.
Sure do. So remember, if you've been hurt in an accident, been a victim of medical malpractice, or have been hurt on a business's premises, call the Green team at Greening Law in Dallas, Texas at 972-934-8900 now. They will fight your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. Greening Law, Office Dallas, Texas.
Maybe a few other things, and here we've been kind of negative. Let's get a little positive. Game four, it was really nice to see Haskinen skating with Harley. And to tell you the truth, as much as I've seen them play together, I love those two as a pair.
Yeah,
because Harley's one of these guys. They've spent some time in Texas with him attached to what a more traditional defensive defender, and he can do it, but he excels when he's with an offensive threat. And I think Haskinen will draw so much attention that it'll allow Harley to thrive, and he'll thrive quickly and exceptionally.
And I think as well, we've seen Haskinen excel playing with high-end thinkers, high-end, technical, talented players. And yeah. It's not, Haskinen is not, he plays well with everybody, right? That's kind of his deal. But I think we've also seen that it's not one of those situations where there's a finite number of chances. And if there's another offensive guy out there, Haskinen's go down. It's no, if there's another guy out there that can move the puck, Haskinen will leverage that. And the unit will just create more, right? That was another spot at the table.
The other thing I found interesting that I hope the Stars take a little bit to heart was Freddie Olofsson got in the game.
Yeah, almost
and
scored.
You know what?
Great chance.
You know what? He's playing fourth line. That's kind of where he needs to play. That's where his skill set is. He's great on the boards, but he wasn't a disaster. In fact, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
He hadn't had any game action in a month and a half. And so maybe there's a little lesson there that says, trust your guys.
Especially in those energy lines, right? There's maybe some value in how many times have we joked on this podcast and in other forums, check out the DBD site, how many times we've made jokes about how Dallas as a franchise has been able to consistently turn out, third and fourth line skaters. So maybe I could see the being advantage, right? Just fresh legs, fresh perspective, energy, enthusiasm, all of those things. Just, it's one of the things this team does well. Why not use it?
Well, and I think maybe we're doing a better job of developing people. So for instance, we have a defender down at Texas named Ryan Shea. Actually set a Texas Stars record for plus minus in a season. Led the entire AHL in plus minus, I think like plus 39. I mean, you hate the stat, but plus 39 kind of tells you something.
Yeah, when it gets big enough, it means something. Yeah, filters through the noise. Sample size filters through the noise.
Right. And so here's a guy who's cost controlled. And are you going to tell me that you can't use somebody like that who's going to cost you, under $1 million a year, as opposed to going out and getting your rental of the year, whether it's Colin Miller, whether it's Ryan Suter, whoever? Maybe this organization will finally get to the point where it gives some of these guys that they've invested in and developed a little time to show that they're ready for the next level. And I think they may need to do that as they see how contracts are going to sort out here in this next year.
Yeah, I mean, especially, just because we're on the subject, things probably aren't going to get any better with Suter as well, right? And that contract's still on the books. So they're going to have to figure out, the Robertson extension, Hintz's, I think, kicks in. They're going to have to pay some people. So the ability to find cost-controlled assets, right? Wyatt Johnston is amazing and wonderful for what he does on the ice. That value gets enhanced 10 times because they're getting what they get out of Wyatt Johnston on a rookie contract, right? And so they need some guys that they can plug into the roster that will allow them to pay the top end. Right. And make sure that high end talent sticks around. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be spots, and we'll get into this in the offseason, but there's going to be spots that need to get filled in the top six, whether that's with guys that are on the team now, Domi or you know, Dadonov even potentially, or it's going out into the market. Right. But there's going to need to be guys they sign, and they're going to have to find the money for it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you know, I'm actually expecting Jim Nill to be a little busy in this offseason. And here's why. You have Colin Miller there signed for 2 years. He'll have one year left. Yeah, same general situation with Yanni Hakanpaa. These guys aren't the core people in your lineup. Yeah. Hey, you know, Miller's not playing every single game. If you don't trust this guy to play in the playoffs, why is he a core to what you're trying to do in the regular season? That question needs to be answered, because there's absolutely no reason why Joel Hanley is a fixture in the Dallas Stars defense for what is it, the third playoff run in a row. And he's your seventh defender, but you trust him and you don't trust these other guys that you're bringing in. And so if that's the case, it's your own damn fault if you keep him.
Yeah. And those are the spots in the lineup you can experiment with, because if it goes poorly, if Olofsson had a bad game, even in the context of that one bad game, you can slide minutes around and all of a sudden he plays, you know what I mean? Like you can get away with making a mistake at that level. If you know, let's say Shake, they call him up, he doesn't play well. Okay. Give him 9 minutes. You've done that with Hanley before, right? Like it's one of those, like, yeah, everybody else has to play a little bit more, but you don't want to do it every single day, every single game, every single night. But like, you're telling me that you can't give Miro an extra 4 or 5 minutes one night because you tried something and it didn't work. And that's more of a risk and more of a danger than, well, what if it does work, then all of a sudden you've got a player that's an asset and a contributor rather than somebody whose kind of main goal and main ability is just to not make things worse.
Right. And you're talking about an entire core of defenders. And even now, some forwards as well, that you've spent 4 or 5 years developing down in Texas, who have turned out to be pretty good players who are under cost-controlled contracts, and you don't trust them enough to put them in at the NHL level, and so you keep on reaching for this guy who's going to come in and fill a role. Well, I would argue let one of these guys, you know, or multiple of these guys get their chance, get a look, and I think we've seen enough evidence that with the development program that the Stars have in place, these guys come into the NHL and they're pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, at the higher end, certainly, but Thomas Harley, right?
Yeah.
He's been a revelation this postseason by the way. Yeah. There've been moments, there've been warts, but he's been a huge positive, and it speaks to that approach, right? They're doing a good job in Cedar Park right now, getting these guys ready and getting these guys where they can play and can contribute. And I think this is a team both right now and also in the medium to long term is going to be better going to be well served using that.
Yeah. And here it's been a weird year because all the cap gymnastics that the team did, I'm kind of hoping that next year we'll end up with a couple of forwards who are eating nachos. And I no longer believe Taylor now that they don't serve nachos in the press box, because I saw a picture yesterday of nachos in the press box. but yeah, let's get a couple guys in the press box who can come in, prove themselves. If it's not working out, then they'll rotate back out. But I think next year with the development program that we're on, I have high hopes for Maverick Bork. And I think there are a handful of other guys who have a chance to contribute.
Yeah.
And Olofsson, I think, is a prime example of a guy who can fit a role and fit it in a cost-contained manner.
And the Stars need them to contribute. So I think it's going to be an interesting offseason for a lot of reasons, but definitely want to keep things focused on the Western Conference Finals. So Dallas is headed to Vegas. We have signs of life from Jason Robertson. Jamie Benn's going to miss another game. Dadnoff out. I don't know. I haven't seen anything about his status for.
He didn't take the trip.
He didn't.
So he's out for game five.
Out for game five. So what is your outlook? We've talked about reasons to be hopeful. What is your outlook heading into game five, as our wonderful producer mentioned before this, right? They're all elimination games now.
I mean, I'm interested to see how they play. And I don't have a lot of hopes that they're going to win four games in a row. Vegas has proved to be very tough.
It's a good team.
And so they're a good team. They keep the puck to the outside. And other than that top line, Dallas really hasn't showed that they can score 5-on-5.
No.
Or they need to get on the power play. And the power play has been real good. So, power play and 5-on-5 from the top line doesn't sound like a winning formula for a four game heater.
It sure doesn't. And the thing is, I think you look at it and you know, I would start hoping / as a Vegas fan being nervous. I think you win game, you make it 4-2, and that's when you start to see some of the pressure dynamic shift. Right. And all of a sudden you've got a home game coming up. All of a sudden you're starting to get the, well, but they might, you know, right now we're still in gentleman sweep territory and, you know, not a lot else. So it'll be like,
but,
you said,
but I mean, you back it off. It's like you can't win a game unless you win periods, and you can't win a period unless you can shoot the puck, and you can't shoot the puck unless you can win a board battle. It all comes down to having this personal responsibility and being more motivated and better at it than the guy you're faced up against. And so I think that's the way the Stars need to look at it. It's like win the small battles, and ultimately, if you win the small battles, the bigger battles will come.
I think that, and I think the other thing you do if you're the Stars is you focus on how you got here. And with the exception of, you know, you obviously blew game three, but games one and two were overtime. And I think, you know, if you're trying to stoke hope, you're looking at it and saying, listen, we're too bad. And even in games one and two, they had chances to win in overtime. And I guess they didn't have a chance to win in overtime before they lost. But you could look at game, you know, they're a bounce or two away from this being a 3-1 series. Right. And so, no, it's not. This isn't saying, oh, they've got it in the bag by any stretch. The odds are long and the deck is stacked. But I think if you're building the emotional case to still invest and to still be hopeful, it starts with how close the series has been to this point. And, you know, anything can happen in the playoffs. Right. Get another one. Get back to Dallas and see if you can force a game, you know, see if you can force game six and then see what happens after that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really two things. Yeah, you know, as a player, you have to concentrate on the task at hand, and that's, you know, where's the puck, where's my man, and how do I win that battle? Mm-hmm. As a fan, you kind of at this point, I think what you say is, let's enjoy watching the Stars play Stars hockey, which yes. Means getting a little speed through neutral zone, getting some good rush chances. And then having the top line do their thing where they put everything in a blender and all of a sudden Jason Robertson comes out of a shot from nowhere that beats the goaltender because they didn't even know it was coming. And Sagan returning in some strange way to do Sagan things, and hopefully Marchment not tripping over himself, and Domi passing as opposed to trying to go upside a 6'6 guy's head. Well, the various things like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I think as well, just enjoying, if nothing else, having a moment, getting some opportunities to this has been such a fun season. This has been such a good group. There have been, you know, and again, the order of things matters, right? But take away the horrid game three performance. And this has been one of the years that I think you look back on and fondly and think about more along the lines of how much the team accomplished versus how much the team left on the table. And that has not been, for a bunch of different reasons, that has not been the case for the Dallas Stars in as many seasons as it maybe should have over the you know, most recent stretch. So that's, I think, something to not lose sight of as well, even as we, you know, try before we even get into, well, what if they, you know, what if they make history, right? Just appreciating how we got to where we are.
Yeah. I mean, to tell you the truth, game four was very unstressful to watch. primarily because in game three I gave up. And so it's like game four, it's like, hey, they're playing okay hockey. Yeah, exactly. Why should I be any better? Game four was kind of enjoyable because I got to see some great people who I like watching play hockey, and they, for the most part, played the way I hoped that they would the entire series and the entire season. And so that's what I hope to see in game five, is them put together a Dallas Stars game. And if they put together a Dallas Stars game, they'll win slightly more than they'll lose. And so, fine. If that happens, then we'll move to game six and I'll invest a little more.
Do it again. Yeah.
Yep.
I love to hear it. Yeah. And I think the last thing I want to touch on is, and we're keeping this positive. We've already talked about Ottinger and kind of how he struggled. But the last thing I'll focus on is, I'm glad as well that game four went much better, because we are just seeing, I think, the emergence to a lesser degree, Haskin. I think he'd already emerged, but he's getting a lot of his necessary, deserved, well-deserved flowers. And also, watching everybody else in the world see what we see in Hintz has been something as a Stars fan. I've got hockey buddies on the other coast that kind of fall into the trap of only following their teams, not everybody else. And I've been able to just grin and respond to the, hey, tell me about this Hintz guy. What's his deal? And it's sort of, he has been emerging over the last couple of seasons. And I feel like this postseason has really, he's having his moment. And it's one of those things that I think, once you kind of, you elevate your Q score, right, and you're in a different stratosphere of players. And I think that the Roope Hintz coming out of this postseason is going to be regarded differently than the guy coming into it. And I'm pleased for that, because he should be. And we've known it as Stars fans for a while, but he is just a heck of a player.
Yeah, what was it? DeBoer said when he took over, it's like he knew he was good, but seeing him up close on the ice as his coach, he's a freight train coming down at full speed.
Yeah, and the Domi quote, right? He's the guy you build and create a player playing a video game, and so he's the guy you get annoyed at your friend building, because like, give him a weakness, do something.
Yeah, the only serious question I have about Hintz right now is, who tells him to cut his hair?
At this point, right?
Right, or at any point.
You'd think they'd know better.
Yeah. Oh well.
Oh well, but it's good. I we'll see how I feel after tomorrow night, but it's nice that they at least have started washing the taste of game four out of our mouths. And I'm not, I think your line about hope is the right one. I'm not fully back in given the situation, but I'm certainly interested that, they're off of DVR watch later status, certainly. And looking to see if they can rope me back in before destroying me a little bit more.
As you can tell from some part of the conversation, I half of my brain is kind of in off-season mode, but there's still a pretty good part there that I'm going to be sitting there watching live. And I cross my fingers. If we're going to go out, let's go out playing Dallas Stars hockey.
Yeah, and I think my closing thought will be, I think the idea is, and it's sort of from the start of the series, right? The idea, Dallas is going to be competitive in any given game. They can win any given game against Vegas, and there's every reason on a one-game basis to expect them to come in and play Dallas Stars hockey and be successful, and focus on that. Don't worry about what's going to happen in a theoretical game six or game seven. Don't worry about the Guildenstern, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern dead coin flip bit where it's heads every time. Like, don't worry about, can they do it over and over? And just worry about, can Dallas, be worth your time? Can Dallas compete and win a hockey game tomorrow night? Right. And the answer to that question is yes. And it's worth tuning in. And it's worth seeing what happens. And hopefully they'll continue to get a little bit of their mojo back before this ride ends, whenever it ends. And that's all we should focus on right now. And the rest will, whatever happens after, will happen after.
Let's make Vegas sweat a little.
Right.
That's a group that needs to sweat a little bit.
That's right. Especially in Vegas, sweat out the alcohol a little bit. But yeah, it'll be, hopefully we get another good effort. Hopefully we get this team playing their game and we get to enjoy it just a little bit longer before the chaos of the offseason settles in.
Enjoy the game, buddy.
You too, Mark. Thanks for joining us. KT, thank you for putting it together. Don't forget to like and download. We'll talk more once whatever happens, happens. We've got an off season coming up, a whole bunch of good content on defendingbigd.com. So stick with us. We'll stick with you. There is always hope. This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.